And welcome to the Fanboy Garage. I'm Chris Lasanti, joined by my co-host Aaron Varola.
Yo, what's up, folks? Welcome to episode 95 of the Fanboy Garage. Wow, we are ticking this down five away from 100. That's going to be a huge episode. Maybe.
Yeah.
Right? We're so busy. Anyways, once again, we are joined by Vanessa Vanana. Vanessa Vanana, what's up, girl?
Hey, guys. You know, living the life of quarantine.
I know. It's like just when you think we're about to get out of it, in New York at least, they tack on, what, two and a half weeks?
Yeah, it's Jumanji level 6 now.
By the way, that second Jumanji film, Chris, I know we talked a little bit about it, like a couple episodes back.
Yeah.
It wasn't half bad. I checked it out.
Yeah. Oh, you're... Wait, well...
The things we do during quarantine.
You're talking about the second in the sense of the one that... The most recent one.
Yes.
Not the second in the franchise.
Right.
Got it.
Next level, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Level, whatever. Anyways.
Okay.
So, welcome back.
Thank you. Thanks for having me again, guys.
It's always a pleasure. Always a pleasure. I know you've got lots of fans out there that listen to our show that are chiming in at us, kind of hitting us up on Instagram. They get very happy when they hear you. So you guys are getting another dose of banana.
Oh, I'm really so appreciative of that. Some people have reached out to me personally and have told me that they've messaged you guys. So you know who you are, and I just want to say thank you. And I enjoy you guys listening, and I feel connect, especially now. We just want to feel some sort of connection, and I think our messages and our where our attention goes, especially right now, is extra special.
Yeah very cool.
Ditto. Yeah.
So Chris,
yeah,
what,
so where do we want to start?
I'm kind of lost.
Yeah, well, we have so we got some more Star Wars stuff. So Star Wars has been the gift that keeps on giving here these last few weeks, but we'll talk about that in a little bit, right? Because let's start off with something that we,
because I'll just unleash.
Yeah, because we'll exactly, we won't get to anything else, especially since you and I haven't had a chance to talk about this Mandalorian stuff, because you had sent me a text the other day. And it seemed like you were pretty fired up about, but we didn't really get into it, so we can. But, you know, one of our themes here the last few weeks has been, I guess, tying into all of this, like, the quest for normalcy or the new normalcy or whatever, is what's going on with movies and theaters and streaming and all of that stuff, right? Mm-hmm. So we still have some developments in that. Obviously, we're seeing more movies now hitting direct-to-video, video-on-demand market. I noticed today that Josh Trank's Capone film with Tom Hardy is now available on Vudu to buy or rent for $9.99. Right?
At the same price.
At the same price, which is interesting.
I mean, come on, I mean, I hate to say this because Josh Trank to me was like, he surprised me with Chronicle, but then, you know, Fantastic Four and all of the other BS that kind of rolled out.
Well, he surprised everybody
with
Chronicle, right? I mean, that was what got him. Yeah.
So, and the Capone movie doesn't really, it seems sort of interesting, but like I cannot get past the makeup stuff that's going on with Tom Hardy. And I'm just kind of like, if you can get the makeup right.
Yeah.
It's looking like a Lifetime movie, and I'm gonna pass.
So what interests me about it is not the movie, right? Because whatever. I mean, I love Tom Hardy, but that's fine. I probably won't really watch it. But what interests me is the concept. So we spoke a few weeks back about, you know, when we're talking about Trolls and all these other movies that were like $20 to rent, and it's like, well, what would be the price point if this does become the future, right? Like, is $20 going to be the price point, or do studios start to get creative and say, well, this movie probably isn't going to do well at $20. So what is that price point? So now here you have a studio or a film that gets released at a lower price point, $9.99, but for both a rental or a purchase, which is, I'm not really sure why you would rent it at $9.99 if you could buy it for $9.99, because, like, what do you have to lose at that point? Like, if you love the movie, then you have it. And if you hate it, well, you still have it. But if for $9.99, why would you only want it for 48 hours or whatever if you can have it permanently?
Probably
and then
space.
Yeah, but
is it worth the revisit?
I mean, I guess it's cloud, but if it's cloud driven, who cares? It's not your space, right?
I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's kind of where I'm at with it. So that's interesting. And I think that's because I had said, remember, like, well, what if you do like for certain movies, like we were talking about New Mutants, I think, right? And it was like, well, right, what if you release that for like $6 or $7? Would people be more likely to check it out than, you know, probably the nobody that's going to go see it in movie theaters if it ever hits theaters?
What studio is distributing
Capone? I didn't check, but yeah, I mean, I think it's so I thought that was interesting. And also they announced today that the Hamilton movie. Right.
I did see that.
Is going to go. That was supposed to be released in theaters next year is now going to be released on Disney Plus July 3rd, I think.
I mean,
oh, wow.
Of this year.
Makes total sense. They're probably just working on pre-production. I mean, post-production right now then. Right. Like
I would assume. Yeah.
That's dope. I mean, listen, let me tell you something. Like, Disney Plus is rolling out some interesting content, and they're able to turn things around, like high quality stuff, relatively quickly. So I mean, they've been doing these like sing-alongs. Have you seen that? I don't know, you probably haven't. These are like Disney.
No, we don't have kids.
like FML. And they're really good. Not as in like I'd watch them over and over again, but the production quality of them are pretty good. And so, you know, being able, and they did a first run at this probably 2 weeks ago, and now they've done a second edition of these sing-alongs, and they're like I said, they're pretty dope, and they've just been rolling some really cool stuff out. So Disney Plus is where it's at.
Yeah,
I'm interested to see when they do these kind of the video on demand. I think it's going to be an interesting time for the streaming business.
Yeah, just to answer your question from before, it's an independent release, Vertical Entertainment, which is an independent studio. That's who released and is distributing Capone. It's a $20 million budget film, and also, which I'm learning, LP does the music. LP is awesome, so that's kind of interesting. So if you're a fan of LP or Run the Jewels, you might want to check that out just for that. And the cast is interesting. Kyle MacLachlan, Linda Cardellini, Matt Dillon. Anyway, getting back to this Hamilton thing, it's also interesting because it just so happens that today in New York, they announced that Broadway now will not be opening until at least after Labor Day.
Right.
So,
fall.
Yeah. So that also is, I don't know that that's a coincidence that now all of a sudden they're going to rush this out. But I mean, Disney Plus is really going to be one of the beneficiaries of all of this because they're already 100%. Up to like 33.5 million subscribers in this country. And I think over 53 or 58 million worldwide now.
Yeah.
So they're growing very, very rapidly, and they're really using all of their resources. I mean, the movies are hitting Disney Plus faster than we even would have thought, right? From the time that they're in theaters.
And again, going back to their original content, it's pretty good. I mean, I watched Prop Master, which is a show where a prop collector basically goes around and collects famous props and brings on, you know, the former cast of like famous Disney films. And he freaking goes to Rick Moranis after, during the Honey, I Shrunk the Kids episode. And I'm like, I haven't seen Rick Moranis's face in like, I don't know, 25 years, maybe. So it was a pretty dope, a dope show. I'm all into that kind of stuff. They find like Kermit the Frog's original banjo from the Muppet movie. And so you kind of see how deep, you know, Disney runs and the relationships they still maintain with a lot of the actors that were in their films and kind of bringing that magic to life. It was a really good show. I would recommend it to anyone who's interested in that kind of stuff.
That's awesome. I think if I was an entrepreneur right now, I would figure out how to combine all of these subscriptions into one place and into one lump sum subscription. Mm. Because we're going to be entering this world of streaming, and I really personally, I don't think anything is going to be fully up and running or normal until 2021.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of prepared to spend the next rest of the year and kind of like figure out like, how are we going to adjust? There's going to be no movie theaters this year. I really don't think so.
Yeah. It's funny you said that, 'cause we were talking before, and there's been a lot of speculation on whether or not July, which has a couple of films slated, one of those being Chris Nolan's Tenet film, something we talked about last week, and whether or not that's going to get moved. And I'm like at 85% sure that that movie's going to get moved.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's another Disney film. I think it's Mulan that got pushed to July. I think it's Mulan.
Yeah, Mulan got pushed.
And that's going to get bumped again.
Yep.
100% is going to get bumped again, or it's going to go straight to Disney Plus, which would be mind-boggling to me. They may not put it on Disney Plus. I would say they're going to want to make some money off of it, so they might go the route of Trolls. And
yeah, Mulan is now set for July 24th.
I don't think these movies are happening.
No, they're not. And here's the main reason is, I mean, as states start to reopen, but let's be honest. So like, we know here in New York, is not going to have movie theaters open and fully operational through this summer. That's not going to happen.
No.
Right?
No.
Okay. And in like L.A., now California is slowly starting to reopen things, but in LA specifically, they just extended their stay at home stuff until like, I think,
August.
Through the end of July.
They just punched them in the gut. At least with us, they've been giving it to us in piecemeal. Yeah. I think they've known the whole time how long we've had to stay home, but at least they've been giving it to us 2 weeks or a month at a time. I feel sorry for LA. They just told them all at once that it's probably going to be 3 months, and that's a hard pill to swallow.
And I think a lot of that will be tweaked anyway. I think they are going to be tweaking things as they go, but the reality is, though, things like movie theaters and attractions are in the later phases of all of these phase reopenings, right, in a lot of places. So and if you're not going to have New York and you're not going to have LA and put, like, there's your two biggest markets. So what's the point? So forget about what's happening overseas, which is also a thing to factor into. But, why open a huge movie if your two biggest markets in the country
won't be going to the theater? Yeah.
Correct. So I think these are all the things that they have to start taking into consideration. And that's why, you're right. I mean, I'm starting to think that they're going to have to go to like a plan C right now with some of these movies, because I don't even know that the August movies are safe.
I was going to say, so Wonder Woman's going to be an interesting film to watch, because if that ends up getting moved, I think so. Mm. Marvel moved their movie their new movie, Black Widow, far out, like into November, to the point where you could see that maybe things will start to get kind of quote unquote back to normal, right?
Sure.
But with Wonder Woman, I mean, you can't. You just bump it to October. You know what I mean? You can't bump it to November, because then you're in direct competition with Black Widow. Mm-hmm. So it becomes like an interesting game of chicken. In one sense, you're playing it with, the coronavirus, and on the other hand, you're playing it with your rival studios. Mm-hmm. So I want to see what happens with Wonder Woman 84. Because I agree. I think August is too soon. And again, the contingencies that need to be put into place before, people start returning back to theaters. I mean, you're talking about limited capacity theaters, right? Half capacity.
Right.
And the experience is going, is with a mask on, and, who knows what concessions will look like. You may not even have concessions.
Right. They're saying that a lot of like self-serve isn't going to be a thing anymore. And I know that was a huge thing, like in our friends' AMC's, you know, theaters. Like you could do those self-serve like Coke machines and stuff.
Yeah,
they're saying like that stuff's not going to be a thing. Again, this is all hypothetical. Nobody knows yet, but these are some of the ideas I've seen thrown around. Yeah.
Oh God, it's so bizarre to think like 3 months ago, you know.
Yep.
Shit was like, you know, standard operating procedures. You go to the movies, you get your stuff, and all of that's been upended. Entire industries and businesses are having to rethink their models.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually, how they serve
customers. It's bizarre.
I actually think Mulan might fare pretty well on a, if they released it Disney Plus streaming, and but not if it was at $19.99 like Trolls was, you know. I think at the $9.99 price, I think it would do fairly well.
Yeah. So here's,
what do you guys think?
Well, here's the thing that I think some of these studios have to consider, right? Because we spoke about Trolls and why I felt it was the perfect storm, why it was the perfect film at the right time and everything. But what some of the studios have to figure out is, like, we're going into the summer. So regardless of what is and isn't available, like, after people have been, like, cooped up in their homes for most of this spring, which at least the weather thankfully hasn't really been that nice. But as the weather starts to get nicer, like, people, regardless of what your stay at home orders are going to be and what your states are going to look like and whatnot, people are going to be looking to get out of the house.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that, so I think the perfect window of opportunity to, like, have people locked up at home and just looking for things to watch on television, I think that's probably, that will be closed by the summer. But I do think it'll be an interesting test, though, to see who does take the chance to release what, because I think it might happen, right? It might have to happen. I don't know what the movie's going to be, but who takes the chance to release the major film that's not a children's film to video on demand and with, like, a limited theatrical run going at the same time, right? So for the people who can go see it comfortably in a theater, great. Yeah. But
I mean, technically, Mulan had that.
Yeah.
Because they had, like, early previews.
Sure.
But just before this whole thing happened.
Yep.
So there was some money, you know, obviously there was some money accumulated on that front. I think Mulan is a hot enough movie that it could probably go at the $19.99 price and people still do it, still buy it, even in the summertime.
Right. Mm.
Because of its popularity.
Yeah.
Because I think that movie was well on its way to be doing, to do something different for, like, the, you know, the Disney kind of, live action films. And I think a lot of people were hot on Mulan. And the word of mouth for Mulan was really, really good before everything happened. So I think $19.99 would be the sweet spot, but I don't think they could sustain that for more than like 3 weeks.
Which is probably
before pushing it somewhere else. Yeah, no, I think it's fine. I think they'll make enough money.
Yeah, so I think if you did it at $19.99 at home and you had a limited theatrical run as well, and then you – but I see I would do it not to rent at $19.99.
No.
Yeah, I would do to buy 19 because I'm just one of those people. I just think that you're and I know Trolls was to rent and all that stuff and it did well, but again, that's a specific thing. I would do it. You know, I would almost flip the regular model, right, where it's like gets released in theaters and then you release it on home video, right, to buy it home for a little while and then it goes to a streaming service or whatever. I would kind of flip that, right? So I would release it at home. For, you know, you could buy it for $19.99 or whatever, and I would also then have a limited theatrical run where applicable, and then I would move it to Disney Plus, you know, within whatever.
Do you think that, just given the landscape of things and how fast we're kind of moving into this new reality of streaming, do you think that Disney Plus creates its own store? Its own digital store.
I think eventually that'll happen. Sure, why not?
Yes, I think they're probably working on that a lot faster than.
Well, and here's an example within the Disney family. There's already a precedent for that, kind of. Mm. It's ESPN Plus. So ESPN Plus is a monthly subscription. It's like $5 a month, right, for the streaming service, and they have plenty of content that's available for that $5 a month. But if you want to buy like a UFC pay-per-view, right, like the one that was on this past weekend, you have to buy the pay-per-view exclusively through ESPN Plus.
Interesting.
So then that's already a part of the Disney family, obviously. I mean, there's the bundle, right, with Disney Plus, ESPN Plus, and Hulu. Yeah. So that's basically what you're just talking about. So it's like you want to buy Mulan, you have to do it through Disney Plus, and as long as you have a Disney Plus subscription, it'll stay in your library.
Right.
Which is another way of keeping, of retention, right?
Dude. I think that's the key. If they roll that out, and I'd be interested to see if, because HBO Max is in its, is, you know, on deck, really, if you know, it starts, if they start working on that too as well, right? Because it just makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, it makes perfect sense. If this is our new reality, right?
Sure.
Why would you want to split any costs with, say, an Apple,
right,
or an Amazon,
yeah,
right, to rent or purchase films when it could just be done through your service?
Yeah.
And get all that content right there.
Sure. And here's the other thing, though. So they might have to get creative with it, though, because, you know, you might have to allow it, you know, let it be like a Movies Anywhere type of deal, you know, where it also syncs up and stuff like that. You know, and see, here's the thing. I know that there are people, I was talking to a couple of them today, that are at the point now where, since Disney Plus became a thing, like, they're perfectly content. And these are people who love these movies and will go see them and stuff like that in the theaters once or whatever, but like, they're not going to buy them at home, but they will wait for it to come on Disney Plus to watch it, right? So like, someone was asking me today, like, is Infinity War and Endgame, are they on Disney Plus yet? And I said, yeah, they are. And they're like, oh, cool, because I want to watch them.
Infinity War isn't.
What's that?
Infinity War is not.
It's not on Disney Plus?
No.
I could have sworn I brought it up on my app this morning.
Are you sure about that?
Because
it's still on Netflix.
That's weird that Endgame would be.
I just saw it tonight. Really? Endgame is up there, but Infinity War, almost positive, is not.
Well, either way, the point is, though, there are people that will wait, right, for these things to come for free, quote unquote free, on Disney Plus. So we're now at this point. So if you are going to have people purchase through Disney Plus, right, as opposed to Vudu or Amazon or whatever, how long do you wait then to have it become part of the Disney Plus library? Mm-hmm. You might have to wait a little longer, right? Because I don't know how many people are going to buy something if 3 months later it's going to be on there for the same price.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, I think for Mulan, because it is a film that caters more to maybe a younger crowd, like children as well. Mm-hmm. You know, because of the story and how it came from a Disney cartoon, they should wait to put it on Disney Plus, because kids in that bracket, they are the ones that, if you buy something, and I'm sure, Aaron, you can attest to it, like you did, I think, 2 weeks ago, they want to watch it again and again and again. Whereas adults, we might be okay with renting it once, watching it, and then if it's okay, you really don't need to see it again, unless it's like a, you know, like an Infinity War, like Endgame type situation, mm-hmm. where we're just obsessed with the story as us, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting, because I think Onward was the only movie that, and it's different because Onward had a limited theatrical run before it went to video on demand at a cost. And then what, like 2 weeks later, was on Disney Plus. So I think that's a special case. I think, you know, they're going to be experimenting with Artemis Fowl, which, again, I don't think anyone was really tripping over themselves to go see,
right?
Which will go from, you know, was supposed to be a theatrical release and now going straight to Disney Plus. Something like Mulan, though, again, I think with a 3 week window, for paying to view it or to rent it or whatever, I think is enough time to get some money. Nowhere as close as what they probably would have banked. Like, we're not talking billions of dollars, like what they would have banked on a normal release. But then I would assume that it would go to Disney Plus. And if you were really hot to see that movie and don't have a Disney Plus subscription, then you'd subscribe, and then you get they're getting more money out of you. So.
Right. So just so you know, Infinity War will be debuting on Disney Plus June 26th.
Told you.
Once those things expire. So there you go. So yeah, and again, there's a precedent for that too, also set with ESPN Plus, something similar to what you just described, right? So right now, so if you wanted to buy like a UFC pay-per-view and you don't already subscribe to Disney to ESPN Plus, you get like a package deal. So they'll give you for like, let's say the pay-per-view itself is normally like $65, and a year of ESPN Plus would be like $60. So you could get for like $85, you can get the pay-per-view and a year of ESPN Plus.
Nice.
Now, obviously, you can only do that one time because as soon as you right, but the idea is that they will bundle that in, so they could get creative with it and say, "Hey, I mean, 33 million people already have Disney Plus, but if you didn't have it already and you wanted to see Mulan through Disney Plus, and purchase it, they can cut you a deal." Buy Mulan and get a year of Disney Plus for whatever. There's things like that that they could work through. I'm just trying to figure out whether the model, it's tough because, I mean, it's interesting if you want to try to, if you want to have Disney Plus house all of your titles, but then it's like, well, what happens once it becomes like a free title?
Right.
I don't know, but I'm sure there's a way to do it, and I'm sure they're thinking about it. Mulan, if they did do it, and again, we're just speculating here. I mean, none of this could matter because they
I
may
mean,
not
Bob
do any of
Iger
this.
said,
But
Bob Iger said as much.
yeah,
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't specific to Mulan, but he said, and I'm paraphrasing here, expect to see more theatrical films that were originally intended for
sure.
theatrical release to be going to Disney
Yeah.
Plus.
And I mean, we're seeing Warner Brothers is going to take their shot at it with Scoob next week, or actually this week, right? This Friday, May 15th, Scoob gets released.
Yeah, and it's getting promoted like
It
crazy.
has, and I haven't seen any. By the way, I noticed AMC hasn't released any statements saying that they're never going to show any Warner Brothers films ever again
You
because
know
of
what's
this.
interesting? You know what's funny? So, about the Universal thing, I was thinking about this
Yeah.
a lot. And yeah, I mean, Universal did give the theaters a big ol' FU. And in a way, it's kind of stupid. I mean, we said this before, but the theaters are definitely out of their mind for giving the middle finger back, the return middle finger back to the studio, because Universal has the Trolls franchise, right? They have the Minions and Despicable Me franchise. They have the Secret Life of Pets, The Grinch, all of these animated films, these family animated films of recent, like if you go back, these are all Universal films. So that's a huge library, and of course, think of sequels and all of the other stuff that they've got lined up. They're not hurting. The theaters are definitely not hurting Universal. Universal is making a very, very smart move, without a doubt. And I can totally see this being a like normal thing for them as a studio, just to drop stuff on VOD, because their movies are, I mean, these are millions, billions of dollars, you know. Don't know where I was going with that, but anyways. I mean, I just think.
Bottom line, it is our new reality. I don't like it when people say new normal because I don't want to accept it so readily and easily. And I feel like that's what the world is doing, and it makes me kind of sad. So I'm just going to say our new reality, but these companies should start going the streaming platform because and they should test and see how these films do. They might have to sacrifice some, but that's going to be their immediate future, so at least they get data from it and then they can build upon it and make it better. I think I might be the pessimist route tonight, but I think that we're not going to be returning to theaters until next year, if anything. And, you know, if they want to make any money, then they got to take bold steps to do that.
Yeah. And, you know, you had mentioned Fandango now, Aaron, right? Mm-hmm. A couple of episodes ago. Now, I don't know. I mean, we didn't talk about this, and I'm not sure. But it was kind of, this has been like an underreported story. You know that Fandango Now, which is owned by NBC Universal, they are buying Vudu.
Oh, get out of here.
Yeah. So it's not, the deal hasn't been closed yet. But
wow, they're shaking that out of Walmart's fingertips.
Well, so Walmart wanted to, so Walmart didn't originally, Vudu was its own thing originally, right? And then Walmart bought it and they tried to tie it in with their stores. But now I guess Walmart decided that they're not going to be aggressive in like the streaming service wars or whatever. So NBC Universal is going to use it to, because Fandango Now had a service similar to Vudu that people just weren't really using much. So now they can incorporate it all. And so there you go. So there's a, you know, more of that corporate synergy now, right? So now NBC Universal has Peacock. They're going to have, they have Fandango Now, which is now expanding with the purchase of Vudu. And there's a service in Fandango that is, was primarily, a, you know, originally a ticket seller.
And this is Universal.
And this is NBC Universal, which is now going to be, you know, enhancing their streaming and video on demand libraries going in that direction. So, I mean, you really talk about the writing on the wall. I mean, this whole thing may have, you know, accelerated this process, but I really feel like, you know, people are talking about how different we're going to be, you know, coming out of this, right? In so many ways. And we are, but, you know, here's one of these things that I think is going to be, you know, one of the biggest changes that you're going to see is this is accelerated because you have more people now talking about streaming services and streaming things, even comics. I read an article today that DC Universe has had like a 35% increase, I think it said, in people reading their digital comics.
I mean, because that's the only thing that it's good for right now.
Yeah, but still, like, but it's happening, though. You know what I mean?
Jab. Yeah. Jab.
So
DC Universe is such a waste of money, except if you're interested in reading comics, I guess.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, so that's, you know, you're seeing people, Netflix numbers are up. Obviously, Disney Plus's numbers are up. ESPN Plus, thanks mostly to that bundle, they're up in subscribers. Hulu again because of the, but they're all up. So you're starting to see all of this stuff go up, and I don't think that that's going to change much now because people have really been utilizing these streaming services to the point now where it's like it's become such a normal part of their existence.
Dude, my wife turned over to me yesterday and was like, when are we canceling cable?
There you go.
Because we're not watching anything with the exception of like a life. Yeah, you know, we talked about this, the Lifetime shows, and yeah, she's 100% right.
Yeah,
and because well, then the other part of that too, she's like, how much money are you spending on these streaming services again? And I was like, that is a question I am not answering.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, we're cutting the cord. That's it. It's over.
Yeah.
And we're throwing it out the window.
Yeah. And I think that, and you're going to, you know, so I just really do believe that one of these studios is going to take the shot with a, what was supposed to be a major film, you know, and I don't think it's going to be Wonder Woman 84, although that would be great. But I do think it, you know, it's going to be one of these movies. They're going to take a shot and that's going to be the true test. You know, I mean, Trolls was a nice first kind of shot, first experiment, but it's going to take a movie like a Mulan or something like that to go this route for us to truly have an idea. And the thing we have to take into consideration is, you know, don't get so obsessed with comparing the numbers, right? Because we tend to do that. And out of context,
with the box
like,
office results.
I mean, in this case, it wouldn't be right. So let's not look at how much a movie makes through streaming versus like what box, because you don't have theater splits at that point.
Right.
Right. And so more money would
and
be going.
Marketing is probably different too.
Marketing would be different as well. Yeah.
Way different.
Sure.
You know, because you're not posting shit all over subways and stuff like that where people can't see it.
Yep. And
Everything goes digital. Yeah. And that's significantly cheaper.
And if it's in the go ahead.
No, you finish your thought and then I'm going to, cause you said subway. I'm going to jump in with some.
Okay. So I was going to say, you know, considering the fact that now we're talking about like NBC Universal owning like a Fandango Now Vudu, right? Where you can buy and rent titles, and Disney Plus, who knows, with Disney potentially creating their own little store, like you said, like now they're not even going to have to worry about splitting too much of the pot with other, you know, streaming services to carry their content as far as sales. So, you know, their profit margins will probably go up. So they won't have to make as much.
Yeah.
And if they could use it to drive, like, so there's that synergy thing, right? It's that, you know, a buzzword that everybody throws out there, right? When we have these mergers and stuff, but there's a reason why it's a thing. And like, if you're Disney, you can use it as a springboard to eventually lead to like maybe more Disney Plus subscriptions, right? Because Disney's Disney. It's all one company. They don't really care where their profits come from, right? As long as they're coming. So NBC Universal, same thing. Like, they can use it to drive their streaming, their Fandango Now, the Vudu, whatever that winds up being, to drive Peacock. And, you know, try to get a leg up, because now it's not about competing with your other networks anymore. Now it's, we're finally seeing that content provider driven television that we've been hoping for and talking about for a couple of years now, where it's content providers competing with each other over their own product, rather than saying like, we're going to sell this show here and there and there. It's like, well, we have, this is our service, this is your service, this is your service. We all have to compete with each other now, because this is how people are going to be watching television and getting their movies. So there's other benefits to it. And I think if they utilize all of that correctly and smartly, then, yeah, I mean, I think there's bigger benefits there than just thinking about, well, you know, we could have made $1 billion at the box office. Well, but how much is the product worth this way when you factor everything else in? I think that's probably the big picture view here of how they have to look at things. And it may not be worth it, but I think that's how they have to look at it and analyze it.
I just wanted, because you said Subway, and it made me think about another streaming platform that debuted in April, Quibi, which is not doing well. And I was just wondering, you know, because of the whole thing, I was just wondering if any of you guys have it, have downloaded it, have checked it out. It is $4.99 a month with a 90-day free trial in the beginning. And then it's $7.99 a month after that.
I don't even know what Quibi is. What is that?
Oh, so it's an app started by Jeffrey Katzenberg, or I would say a mobile video platform. And it gives like 10-minute content, but all of the content that they advertise, at least on TV and in all the commercials, are with celebrities. Like Idris Elba has a show on it. Chrissy Teigen has a show on it, and they're
these are like 10 minutes long.
Yeah, 10 minutes, quick bites, because they're meant for your commute. They're meant for that busy lifestyle that we had.
I mean, that makes a lot of sense why they're not doing well.
Yeah, sure. And, like,
yeah. I mean, my daughter watches this show called like Sharko and Zig or something like that. And it's their quick bite shows. And I'm like, I can't take this. Like, how do you know what the hell is happening? It's happening so fast.
Yeah, that's exactly what Quibi stands for, quick bites. It's a shortened form of – so I was just wondering, because, you know, the people behind it, Katzenberg, you know, DreamWorks, right? Sure. And then their CEO is, like, former, you know, Hewlett-Packard, like, she, Princeton, Harvard educated, you know. Right. They kind of just, like – yeah. But then you have someone like, you have something like TikTok doing so well, but it's very different. I was just wondering if you guys even had the app, downloaded it, or watched any content on it.
Yeah.
I haven't, because I'm not paying $5 a month right now for that, and then $8 a month after that. But I was just wondering if you guys did.
I haven't. That's not my thing. And I mean, I think there's a few reasons why it wouldn't have done well. And I think that, well, for one, having an app that's geared towards like people commuting and stuff, now people aren't doing that. So that's part of it. So people are actually looking for more long-term stuff right now. But I also think, you know, if you're going to tailor something like that, like a subscription app, towards people that are too busy to sit there and really watch television, they're probably not likely to. That's really not a good audience to try to get to pay money to watch video content, right? Because they could just find anything. Like with YouTube, you know, and all of that stuff that they could just latch on to. Like, it's kind of a weird business plan.
Like the squirrelies. They're like that squirrel.
Well, I think the main thing, like even Chris Hemsworth, I think it was celebrity driven. It almost seems like a OnlyFans, you know, like you could pay $5 a month to get like special curated celebrity content for celebrities that you follow. Now, if you don't care about Idris Elba, then they just lost you right there. I agree with you. It's not really a sustainable model.
Are these like reality shows? Like
they're
are they like actual content?
The one with Cardi B and Offset.
See, that's it. You lost me right there.
Okay. Well, the one with them, I think it's just a reality show following them around 10 minutes of their lives. I think Chrissy Teigen has something home cooking based because that's kind of her brand. She has a couple of cookbooks and stuff like that. So it's really interesting because they ventured into this world of mobile app attention, you know, where most of our attention is, and try to create content out of it. But who knows what would have happened if we didn't have the current pandemic that we are experiencing right now. I just wonder. I wonder if it would have done well, but it really got upended.
I'll say.
Yeah. I mean, it's just weird to me. I mean, I think we've seen that with streaming and stuff like that. Like, if you look at the places that have had success, I mean, all of that is based on binge watching, right? And sitting around for hours at a time watching content. So it's interesting that they would think that, like, there's an audience for, like, well, let's see, maybe there's only people that don't have time to watch something, so we'll give them 10 minutes of this, and they'll pay for it. I don't know, it's just weird. Like I said, like, if YouTube wasn't a thing, then maybe, but it is a thing. And
I think they were trying to appeal to the younger millennial.
Oh, clearly,
demographic who seriously is like...
No, not even millennial. It's Gen Z. Because I'm a millennial, and that's not us. We're like almost... Some millennials are almost 40 now.
Oh, I know. You're talking to one.
Okay, okay.
I'm saying like...
It's the generation beneath us.
I think the other thing too is that this demographic of this generation is highly influenced by celebrity, right? I mean, just look at the Fyre Festival and TikTok.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And all of that like bullshit, you know, like they like love that stuff. And I think when you say, oh, specialty curated celebrity content, like they're all over that shit.
Yeah, except when they have to pay for it.
Right.
Because there's so much of it freely available now.
Exactly. At nothing, you know.
Yeah,
I
mean, you can even go on your favorite celebrity's Instagram and get probably an hour of content every day.
I mean, The Rock talks for like 3 minutes.
Yeah,
I'm like locked in on whatever it is that he's got, whatever he's selling.
Yeah,
I know.
It's in your tequila, man.
I gotta get my hands on that. I know people scroll in bed and you'll watch a YouTube video, you know, for 10 minutes or whatever. But I think it's the fact that you have to pay
Yes.
And it's a hefty price, you know. That it's $8 a month.
That's more than Disney Plus.
That's more than Disney Plus. So yeah. I don't know what these guys were thinking.
Yeah.
But it, you know, if anyone has it out there that's listening, like, let us know what it's like, because we can't view the content unless we pay.
Yeah.
And I'm very, very curious if the content lives up to the monthly subscription cost that people are paying for it. It says it has 1.3 million users and it's been downloaded 3.5 million times. That doesn't say anything. But the active users are 1.3 million, but they had projected 7 million users in their first year.
So that's kind of like a 50% or more than a 50% drop
more
off.
Than that, yes. More than that. That
for means... people who get on and then they're like, meh, don't like it. I'm
yeah.
out.
It's
yeah.
That's like a third of the, no, more than that, right? Two thirds of
more
the
than
people?
That.
Yeah. Two thirds.
Have decided. And it, yeah. When did it debut?
April 6th.
Oh, April 6th. So they've already lost that many people
yes.
in a month. That's no good. Yeah, that's good. Poor.
No bueno.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So wow. No wonder you guys haven't.
I mean, $8.99 as a price point is wild. Like I said, it's more than Disney Plus. It's like a dollar less than WWE Network. I mean, if you think about it, like in hindsight, I mean, it's less than the ad-supported version of Hulu. I mean, that's kind of a crazy price point for something like that.
And you have to think about it for, it's actually $7.99 a month. But even for $7.99 a month, you're only getting whatever's on their platform and their short form content.
Right.
If you have a subscription to WWE, for example, you can watch endless things. You can watch past WrestleManias. There's so much content that the bang for the buck, I think that's what everyone is looking for.
Yes.
Especially in the recession that we're going into, you want the bang for your buck while keeping your mental sanity in place, which we do with watching our favorite shows.
Yeah. And I think when it comes to streaming, I mean, one of the things people are complaining about now is that it's like, oh my God, there's so many streaming services now. And I think they're finally realizing the thing I've been saying all along, which is, yes, but streaming gives you flexibility, right? So it's like, don't think of it as cable where you don't have flexibility. With cable, you pay for cable and like you can't say like, oh, I don't want this month. Take it off my bill. Like as far as like you can do that with HBO or whatever, but you can't do it with like individual channels. And you can't jump in and out of things and control the cost like you can with streaming. So with streaming, I think people are settling in now to the services that they use. And they're going to use those, whatever they are, three core services. And then they'll bounce around to other services here and there. But a service like that is just, it's not really going to make the cut when you're deciding between five or six major services that have, like you said, Vanessa, hours and hours of content. I don't know how many people are going to be able to justify that.
So I just did a quick Google search on Quibi, and so it's interesting because they just had a story in CNN Business talking about how poorly their service is doing, and I think it's a bunch of bullshit. So their CEO is Meg Whitman, who in the tech business is quite famous. She was the former CEO of HP and eBay, and they're kind of blaming it on the coronavirus. Everything that has gone wrong to coronavirus, but we own it. No, dude, because and this came from Jeffrey Katzenberg. During coronavirus, people are streaming more than ever. So,
right,
dude, what are you talking about? Your model doesn't work.
Right,
that's the problem. And regardless, because you know they're saying, oh, we built everything from the ground up. We had no, you know, it's new tech. We don't have we're a new brand, original content. We came here with no library, no legacy, as did every streaming service for the most part, like Netflix and others. But come on.
Plus, I don't know what commute they do. I'm pretty sure Jeffrey Katzenberg hasn't probably commuted anywhere in a very long time. But, like, I mean, how many people, I mean, I would love to have, like, a 10-minute commute. That'd be sweet. But most of the people that I know that commute, they have enough time to watch, like, last night's episode of whatever their favorite TV show is. Or when they go to the gym, like they're watching like episodes of shows. Like the idea that you have so little time to watch something that you only need like 10 minute like snippets of things is just odd to me. Like,
dude, the quote here is like, this is from a TV analyst, right? Market analyst. Quibi is the outlier in this pandemic among streaming services because other services have seen a boom lately.
Right.
So is this a product that consumers actually want? That's the question right now. Time will tell if they can turn it on. Yeah.
I mean, clearly, no.
It says, I mean, he's gotten investors from like major Hollywood studios back in 2018, like even Walt Disney, NBC, Sony Pictures, Warner Media, they all invested
into this company. Probably why not, right?
They're probably like, that's our friend. We'll help him
out.
Yeah,
well, that's the other thing,
too. They have a lot of money. I don't think it's anything they were investing in to be like, this is going to be, you know, our bread and butter.
Yeah.
I was muted for a second. I just realized earlier before. But, Chris, you were talking about most people that you know, their commute is probably about 40 minutes to an hour, especially in New York City.
Yeah.
You know? And you can watch a full show during that time.
I know plenty of people that do it. I'm not one of those. Like, I'm not somebody who like is going to watch a show like on a train. I can't.
Yeah,
plus, you know, service goes in and out. But I know people who do. Like, they watch on the train. They
watch a full episode of The Mandalorian.
There you go. Episodes. They watch in the lunchroom, you know, on their lunch hour. They watch. They'll watch an episode, you know, again at the gym. Maybe two episodes if they're dedicated. You know, like there's plenty of opportunity for busy people to watch things, nowadays, and on weekends, you just have time to catch up and whatnot and things like that. So even pre coronavirus, I mean, it's not like streaming just became a thing like a month ago and it became popular.
Right.
I mean, it was always there. It was always popular. It's just now it's taking off even more because out of necessity. And we'll see what the lingering effects are of that and how much of that sticks. But before we could go on and on with this forever, but we do have a couple other things we want to get into. So let's quickly just talk about this whole CW thing before we get into Star Wars, because the CW network is making some moves to sort of in relation to the coronavirus, because they need to plan, right? So they have purchased some shows, one of which is the one season of DC Universe's Swamp Thing, which they're going to be airing whenever the fall season begins, because they are going to need content, right? Original content is going to be, because of all the production shutdowns and whatnot, they're going to try to, hiatus-proof themselves by having as much original content available to air as possible. So Swamp Thing will get a second life, kind of, on the CW. It's not really geared towards their regular target audience, I don't think, but I hope that the show finds an audience there, because maybe that's a shot for it to come back.
Yeah. I never finished it. I think I was like three episodes away from finishing it. I just lost it.
Well, now you can.
Yeah. For free.
Yes. And they also have, bought a bunch of pilots, right? So we were talking before we went on the air about Kung Fu. They're bringing back Kung Fu with a female lead this time and a more modernized story. It won't be in the Old West. So that's interesting. And I mean, they have a whole bunch of pilots coming. What was the other one you were talking about that they were Lost Boys, right? They have a Lost Boys pilot that they're talking about. There's a prequel to The 100, or to The 100, rather, which is a really good show.
Reboot
of Walker, Texas Ranger. So
Jared Padalecki.
There you go. From Supernatural. Another CW show that seemed to never end.
I mean, if they're going to debut some of these shows that are brand new in the fall, that means they're going to start filming shortly, because right now is pilot season, like in quotation marks, we haven't had one, you know. But most usually in May right now, it should be upfronts when they release all of the shows that are coming to network in the fall.
Yeah,
but if it's, but if it is that, that means they are planning to film over the summer.
Yeah. Well, it says the articles that I read seem to think that CW is basically loading up on as much potential content as possible, because they might just want to go straight through to 2021 with all original programming, like not even have like season breaks, just like the shows will end, but then they'll just roll, because they think that that could be an advantage for them, because they know that some of the other networks might struggle to find original content. So I think, and they've always worked on a staggered seasonal model. So for instance, like they'll have shows start in the traditional like September, October, you know, beginning of the season, and then they run through like December or whatever, and then they'll go on a break, and then they'll introduce like some mid-season shows for short runs, and then the other shows come back, and then in the summer, like late spring, early summer, they have like almost a another season that starts, where they'll have like shows that start then, and they run through the summer, through the beginning of the next season. So they've always kind of worked on that type of a model. So I guess they're just kind of loading up on as many shows as possible, because I guess they could, you know, these like the DC shows, for instance, they, you know, they might have enough in the can to have gotten them through like that first wave, and then they'll use like a show like Swamp Thing or whatever to kind of fill in the gap until they can get more of that content finished. Yeah.
And then they buy themselves more time.
Yeah. So it's a proactive approach, and it's cool. It's good to see that, you know, they're thinking about it. And it's a good opportunity. You know, it's a good opportunity for a show like Swamp Thing. It's a good opportunity for, you know, pilots that may have been on the bubble, that they'll get a pickup at least and get, you know, get a tryout.
Right.
You know, more power to them. Go ahead. What are you going
to? No, I was going to say, are any of those shows exciting to you?
What's that? In just on the CW or any of the shows we were talking about?
Yeah, any of the stuff that they, besides Swamp Thing that we've, you know.
Well, I mean, I don't know.
The new stuff that's going to pilot.
I mean, Kung Fu, I'd have to see it. You know, that could be right in my wheelhouse. I spent this weekend watching a bunch of martial arts films. That were all really good. So I'm always welcome something like that if it's good. I mean, a show like The 100, a show I actually really like. So I would always look forward to that, or a prequel to that. The Lost Boys, no, not really.
It's like they tried before.
Yeah.
Didn't really work too well. You know, the thing that kills me about shows that are using martial artists that are martial arts styled shows that don't really have martial artists is that it looks bad. The fight choreography looks bad.
Well, it really can.
And with the CW.
Yeah.
And having gone through a season of Batwoman, like,
oh, God.
Those fight sequences look horrendous. Arrow does an amazing job, but Stephen Amell
is a good athlete.
A you know, and, yeah, and he's a good yeah. and he's a good actor.
Yeah, he's a good actor, and so, he is a good athlete.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the rest of the cast is believable. Batwoman was the one that really shit the bed.
But I think too, if you look though, like look at Daredevil. I mean, Charlie Cox, last time I checked, I don't know that he's I mean, he's not a martial artist, and those fight scenes were great. Oh. So with the right choreography and the right direction.
He uses a stunt double
and stuff, of course. So you could get away with it. I mean, if you use, you know, stunt doubles and you have the right choreographers and stuff like that, use the right editing, right direction. You know, I mean, we were talking off the air. I mean, David Carradine, obviously, in the original Kung Fu was not really a martial artist. I mean, he did like Tai Chi and stuff later in his life, but he's not he wasn't like a traditional martial artist. Certainly didn't do Wing Chun or anything like that. So, you know, and that show was a huge hit. But don't forget, Kung Fu was originally supposed to be Bruce Lee.
Right.
And he got screwed out of that role because they decided to go with an American in the role, ironically playing and, you know, someone who was Chinese. But, yeah, so I don't know. I mean, I would prefer that the person in the movie have a martial arts background. That's what makes it better. Some of the best martial arts films that have come out in the last, say, 20 years or so, 15 years have, you know, starred legit martial artists. So obviously that's a thing. Go figure. But yeah,
I mean you can just, you can just tell, you know what I mean? Like, and I always say, I'm gonna throw a deep cut in here, but not really. The Power Rangers, you could tell, and the ones who were everyone's favorites were the ones that actually knew how to do martial arts. You know what I mean? Like, Tommy Oliver was the boss because the dude was a monster. And he was a legit martial artist, and that certainly came across in the show. So like, yeah, I'm kind of over, you know, these fake shows, and or if you're not really committed to the fight choreography, just don't even waste anyone's time.
Mm. I'm not a CW person, nor do I have cable, so I wouldn't even know. I guess I wouldn't even know where I would go watch CW shows.
So they have a free app. The CW app is actually really cool. It's like you can watch the shows on that app for free. They do expire, like I think some of the episodes after a while, but you can get it over the air with an antenna, or if you download Locast, which is an app that allows you to stream all of your local channels from your area, you can access them all that way too. And I think they're eventually going to be incorporated into HBO Max, right?
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, that's cool. I think in terms of this particular type of show for myself, for Vanessa, I would definitely want to at least tune into a show like that, because it kind of speaks to my type and my demographic, and kind of, you know, I've been practicing martial arts for 7 or 8 years, not in the Shaolin and Wushu style, but also as a Chinese American actress, even though I'm mixed. I would like to see how Olivia Lang carries the show, and that's what I would be looking for myself. Whether she's skilled or not, I think it would be totally awesome if they found an actress that can also do martial arts. We won't know until we see it, but from everything that I see, for example, on her Instagram or you know, whatever she has out on the web, she doesn't seem to be in that world. But they train actresses all the time. I mean, look at Charlize Theron, you know, for some of the stuff she's done, or Halle Berry, for example. And it is possible, it is doable. And with their doubles, I think there is a lot of pressure that we put on women specifically. And I think as a Chinese American minority woman, I think it's even more pressure on her. And we were going through this renaissance of Asian American, like this was our time, you know? So I would be really interested to see what happens, but most importantly, I think the acting and the writing need to be on point. I think that's why Iron Fist, for example, Jessica Henwick played Colleen Wing, and that was a tremendous character, and that was a tremendous opportunity for representation on screen. But that show, I don't know if you guys liked it, but it did not do it for me. I think the writing and the, like, everything was just kind of subpar. It just was not good.
Second season was better.
Yeah, but still
second
not great.
Second season was better, but still not great.
No.
And hopefully this is something that can blow things out of the water. Maybe after Mulan, you know, people can kind of like get on board. I don't remember the last time Asian, or I would say specifically Chinese American woman played a lead in a TV show. I can't think of one. I can think of some half Asians, you know, what was that show called? Oh my God, I forgot the name of the show. But it's been a while. It's been a while. Is it Maggie Q?
Maggie Q, that was
Oh, it was Nikita.
Nikita. Yeah, Maggie Q was in Nikita. You have Chloe Bennett in The Shield, but she's mixed.
Yeah, Maggie Q is as well. So.
Maggie Q is mixed as well. And you have Olivia Munn, who's mixed.
Sure.
She was on Newsroom, but
Yeah.
she wasn't, it wasn't like her leading the show.
Right.
So now we have a Chinese American woman who's gonna lead a series on CW. I think that is a big freaking deal. But we'll see. We'll see. It's a collaborative effort. You know, the writing and the scenes have to be good. You're telling a story. That's not enough. You have to tell a good
Sure.
story.
And I hope that it's not, because I one of my big pet peeves is when they bring a show back or they do a remake, right, or whatever, of a show, and it's like it's a remake in name only. Like they just take like the name and maybe an element of the premise and then just run wild with it, and it's like, well, why just come up with your own original thing then if this is
Agreed.
going to be
Right.
so different? And it's like, you know, then just, you know, carve new ground, make you know, build your own path to this thing if you're just going to use it. So it'll be interesting to see what they, you know, how they go about it. I mean, clearly it's going to be modernized, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But if it's just like called Kung Fu for the sake of the branding, that'll be somewhat annoying.
I wouldn't be surprised if it was. It's CW. They want
Sure.
everything to look pretty.
Of course. And brand familiarity is big for
Yeah,
them as
yeah.
Sure.
Speaking of brands, so there was some Star Wars news that came out. So basically, The Mandalorian is driving a lot of this news, right? So, a couple casting announcements in the last few days. So, Aaron, I know you. Why don't you start talking about this? Because you were very passionate about this whole idea of Boba Fett being in the Mandalorian.
I think it was the Hollywood. No, it was Variety. Variety broke the story that Tamora Morrison, who played Jango Fett, and you know, was obviously he's provided the voice for many of the clone troopers across this, you know, across Star Wars, and he voiced Boba Fett in the revamped original trilogy. Will be returning to the role of Boba Fett, allegedly, for The Mandalorian season two. So there, I mean, what's interesting to me is that they're bringing, you know, we have Rosario Dawson who's stepping into the role of Ahsoka Tano, and that's pretty big. And then I forgot the name of the actress's name, but they're literally bringing to life all of the Clone
Yeah,
Wars
you're talking about
characters.
Katee Sackhoff
Yeah,
as
it's Bo-Katan.
Bo-Katan, yeah.
Yeah, so that's all well and good. That's interesting. The Boba Fett thing, I don't think is Boba Fett, because obviously he's played multiple. I mean, Tamora Morrison's played multiple characters. He could be Rex, who, in Rebels and well, in Rebels is still very close to Ahsoka, and so if we're kind of following this timeline of like an aged Ahsoka, then Rex would naturally still be with her. And it wouldn't be Boba Fett. And I think Boba Fett's too obvious. And then again, I think for me, just being the consumer of all canon for Star Wars, there's some like shifty stuff going on with the character of Boba Fett and his armor popping back up in some of the books, but it's being worn by a sheriff of Tatooine, and then he gets killed, and then somebody else takes it. So I don't know. I don't think it's Boba Fett, and people are hinting that the feet that are in episode five, I forgot the name of that episode, of The Mandalorian, are, you know, that's apparently Boba Fett. But I don't know.
Well, I mean, the one thing is now you'll get a test because, you know, Dave Filoni is like you, right? A stickler for a lot of that stuff. So we'll see if how he goes about that.
Yeah, and I mean, it's funny, someone said they were like, oh, you know, when The Mandalorian dropped, like we didn't know anything about the, you know, what, who the characters were, who anyone was playing. And now it's like they're just opening the can and going, hey, like, here's everybody. You know what I mean? So,
yeah,
I think Boba Fett doesn't, I mean, it doesn't hurt the show, but I don't think it also helps the show. So why say it?
Right.
I hope it's Rex.
I do too. And because I don't know. I have a hard enough time. Like I just would prefer to like keep Boba Fett from in the movies. Right.
Yeah.
Like the way he is.
Mysterious.
Like, I don't want to learn too much more about Boba Fett, like from the movie universe itself, you know? Right. That was one of the things that made him cool, right? So yeah, I kind of agree. And it also does make sense. Your theory makes sense. You know, based on the whole like with Ahsoka being in that and all of that.
Yeah, I mean the thing too is that, and you know, Boba Fett isn't really a Mandalorian, so
right.
I don't know. Everyone's like head over heels. Everyone's losing their shit, except for like, you know, the diehard Star Wars fans are like, wait a second, hold on, wait. We have to remember that this guy played multiple clones and multiple, you know, characters, in Star Wars in general. So you know, everyone's flashing the Boba Fett card because it's a Mandalorian, and I think to me, you know. The first season of the Mandalorian did such a great job at breaking the idea of a Mandalorian away from Boba Fett that it's unnecessary to even visit him.
That's a good point.
And to bring him into the fold. I think the idea of a Mandalorian Boba Fett has been washed away and it's unnecessary completely.
Sure.
But we'll see.
And how do you feel about Katie Sackhoff, she of Battlestar Galactica fame? In my mind,
yeah, and she's in the Riddick movie,
yeah, playing Bo-Katan, who she's played already.
Is it the same? Wait, she I'm did the make voice. Sure I got the same actress. She's in a Riddick movie, right? She's like in the second Riddick movie.
It's possible. I don't know.
I don't remember. She's in The Flash too.
She's in The Flash, yeah. But yeah, that's why I say for me, she's it's always Battlestar Galactica to me.
Yeah.
She's Starbuck. Yeah.
Yeah, she's all good. Like, that's fine. And it's great that she voiced the character already. And she kind of looks like, you know, she kind of looks like the character. So it's cool. Whatever takes her out of The Flash is great for me because she sucks in The Flash.
There you go. She was also in Halloween Resurrection.
She was in what Resurrection?
Halloween Resurrection. The one with Busta Rhymes.
Yeah, skip.
She was in Riddick, by the way.
She was, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, she was the girl again. Or the girl at age, whatever. I think the interesting thing about The Mandalorian was that I think people assumed that it was in production during COVID and that that production was halted. And that it would ultimately delay season two, which is expected to drop in October
right.
of 2020. But that's not the case. Bob Correct. Iger came out and said, hey, it's already wrapped.
Yeah, because they said she already filmed her scenes, Katie Sackhoff.
Yeah, so they're in post-production and already scripting and working on season three, which I like that came out 2 weeks ago. So I don't know why anyone was actually questioning about season two.
Well, I think,
but it's
part of it is Disney's fault, right? Cause they're putting out pictures of like the Peyton Reed thing from last week, right? With the director's chair
Peyton Reed.
So people assume, oh, they must be filming today or they must've been filming, you know, that type of thing. And it's like, it's an odd picture to put out there now. You know, to put out a director's chair with a director's name on it and a Mandalorian helmet sitting on it, like when you've already done.
I think it's brilliant.
It is, but people are going to be deceived. Sure.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's, I get what you're saying, but I also think the timing was perfect because it pulls you into the gallery show that they have right now.
Sure.
The Mandalorian gallery.
Yeah.
And, gets you reignites that excitement for the show and you know, the conversation now is all about the Mandalorian, and clearly that's the thing that's driving Star Wars forward at the moment now that the Clone Wars is over. So you know, I'm excited to see what else is on the horizon for it, but October can't come soon enough, that's for sure,
especially now.
And I mean, that was the thing, like, we, you know, I don't know if Pedro Pascal was actually in the armor for most of the show, you know what I'm saying, for doing the voice. And it was like, oh yeah, Pedro Pascal is the Mandalorian. It's like, is that a stuntman the entire time, and then he just kind of did the voices, and I don't know.
Yeah,
so who knows.
It's too bad they couldn't figure out a way to accelerate that a little bit, but obviously that's not a show you can rush through post-production on, so that's fine. But I think by October we'll all be pretty excited. Since
sure.
Who knows?
And actually think
who knows what our entertainment options will be at that point.
Yeah,
and, you know,
and the pressure is certainly on for season two, because season one was amazing.
Yeah, which could be a good thing and a bad thing, right? Because the pressure's on, and our expectations are very high. So a lot of people I think went into this season one with, I don't want to say low expectations, but with not really knowing what to expect.
Right?
An open mind.
Yeah, because it, you know, we didn't really know, and it obviously, I think it exceeded most people's expectations. Now we have, the bar has been raised, so now there's expectations, serious expectations, and which means they could step up and rise to the occasion, which it seems like, at least from casting and characters, you know, that seems to be the direction they're going in. You know, so I think it could be. Yeah, it can go both ways, but I think they're going to rise to the occasion, something tells me. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're going to do some really cool shit. I mean, that, you know, too. I think it was like right after season one aired its final episode, like Jon Favreau shared a maquette of Gamorrean in a way that we've never seen. And for those that are not Star Wars fanatics like I am, they are the green piggy type characters from Return of the Jedi, and this one was like jacked.
The guards, so like, from
Jabba's palace. Yeah.
Palace.
That's some really cool shit to see that, and it's like that's the stuff that gets me excited, because you're pushing into new territories, and you're kind of giving us something that we've not seen before. Like when you saw the snoot. Oh my god, I forgot his name. Anyways, the dude that, like, he in the first episode, he kind of blows the whistle, and then the transport shows up on the ice.
Yeah.
It's a snoot something. I forgot. Sorry. Those are characters that you see for a glimpse in A New Hope. And, you know, they're doing other cool stuff with them. They're kind of showing them in other ways and in other lights. And I love that stuff.
Well, that's the beauty of the Mandalorian.
Do you think?
Go ahead.
I was going to say, do you think Boba Fett is going to be hunting Baby Yoda?
Probably.
And then they, like, face off?
If it is Boba Fett, maybe. I think the other thing that... it could be.
That would be. I would like to see...
But I don't want to see it, because
one of them Boba, will die.
It's not even that. It's that Boba Fett is a half-ass Mandalorian. Like
this dude
falls into a Sarlacc pit because a blind man like hit him by accident. And this is the most un-Mandalorian thing could happen. Mind you, you've got the Mandalorian who is taking blaster bolts off the chest and eating them for lunch and dinner, gets his ass handed to him, and still manages to like march that baby out of harm's way. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
And then you have the blacksmith, female Mandalorian who's just waiting for stormtroopers to come at her, and she just beats them to a bloody pulp with her like hammers and shit. I mean, this is like kick ass stuff, and then you're gonna bring what, old ass Boba Fett from a Sarlacc pit has been half digested? Come on, man. No, I don't... this is what Chris was looking for.
Yeah, this is.
I love it.
Yeah,
What were you going to say, Chris?
No, that I was going to say that was the beauty of The Mandalorian, was that it had mass appeal, but at the same time, like, you can, there were things you could dig in and get real geeky about for people like Aaron, but you could also, there's things to dig in and get real pissed off about too, apparently, if you're Aaron.
I love it, Aaron.
So, just to bring that passion, but yeah, no, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, I think this is the problem I have with the character of Boba Fett, is that, you know, he was a cool looking character. No one had ever seen anything like him, right? So people were intrigued, and he didn't really say anything. And, you know, I think the reactions of the other characters, like Han Solo and others to Boba Fett, is what kind of created, you know, like, inflated that mystery. And then it goes out like a punk, but people are like, oh, Boba Fett's so cool. Like, you know, because there's nothing more about him. And then we're getting, you know, the prequels happen, and you can get a little more. He's a clone. Okay, that's interesting. And then there's, you know, it came from a Mandalorian who kind of defected. Okay, that's also interesting. And they're building this stuff. But again, he goes out like a punk. So now we've got shows like The Clone Wars, which brings Mandalore to its highest, right? And you get to see all of the stuff that's happened with this, like, group of people, this society of people, the Mandalorians. The show sets off, you know, continuously pushing the envelope. You're not going to have the Mandalorian, who, again, is a kick-ass character, go up against the punk who got knocked into a Sarlacc pit. Like, that just, to me, it just doesn't make any sense. Huh. So
your major issue is not really continuity-driven. It's more, you just don't like, well, not to say don't like, it's, but you're just not like excited about Boba Fett. You don't think he's worthy of this.
I think the show, The Mandalorian, elevated the idea of Boba Fett, the idea, like, everything that everyone thought was cool about Boba Fett, they placed on a new character. Yeah.
Especially since most people who, like, you know, average mainstream audiences that don't know that much about Star Wars, they thought the show was about Boba Fett.
Sure.
Yeah, that's true.
Or
yeah,
that it would be revealed that he was Boba Fett,
right,
or something,
yeah,
like that.
Yeah. Because I had so many people say, hey, you're going to watch that Boba Fett show?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's okay. That's okay.
Sure.
So, anyways, we'll see.
Well, October, right?
Yeah. And I know we've got some Star Wars diehards like Nathan and others that listen. So, yeah, get at me. I'd love to keep on chatting about this.
Aaron, for your sake, I hope now that season 2 of The Mandalorian is a buddy cop show with The Mandalorian and Boba Fett teaming up.
Oh, see, that's interesting.
That might be cool. That actually might be cool, you know, like him, Boba Fett going like, I need to get in touch with my heritage.
Mm.
So I want to team up with Din Djarin and kind of,
yeah, find out about his past, especially like all the flashbacks, you know, from when he was a kid that wasn't really explained. And we saw that in the later part of the season.
Right. Or you find out that Boba Fett was the one that kind of sold him out. I don't know. You know, like, who knows? Who knows? Make him like a scumbag. Or something, I don't know.
Or tie
him to something related to Return of the Jedi, where they have to go into the Sarlacc pit,
yeah,
and find him.
And for all we know, it could even just be a one episode thing.
Sure.
I mean, we don't really know the extent of this. Right. If it is, in fact, you know, Boba Fett, it could be a flashback.
Could be another defected clone who.
Sure.
You know, who finds his armor and puts it on him and claims that he's Boba Fett.
Yeah, could be anything.
Who knows? It could be a whole bunch of things.
I hope not. That would be like, womp womp.
I mean, that's kind of like the books. The books did that.
Yeah.
The books did exactly that. The books, again, somebody pulls the armor. They don't know how this person got the armor, but someone was wearing the armor in Tatooine, so the same place where Luke Skywalker and all this stuff went down. And was wearing the Boba Fett armor, and then he got killed, and then they took the armor, and nobody knows where it went. But there were rumors that maybe Boba Fett was still around. So, But again, I mean, that's book canon. They could reverse some of that. They could expand on it. They could be like, oh, actually, it's, you know, from a certain point of view, it was this. Mm. So, anyways.
Well, I'm excited.
Yeah, I'm excited just to... I'm looking forward to it now just because I kind of want to... Like, I want it to go really well, and I want it to be great, but now I kind of want it to not... I kind of not want you to be happy with it just because I want to get that reaction, but we'll see.
No, we'll be talking. I'll be so stoked when it comes out. I mean, dude, I watched the last episode like repeatedly. That scene where IG-11 is zipping through on the speeder bike with the child, with Baby Yoda on his chest. That brings that literally. I'm such a wuss, but. It literally brings me to tears because it's some of the best Star Wars stuff I've ever seen in live action.
Oh, that's so cute.
It's so dope. The way it's shot and just some of the mechanics of that droid kind of protecting the baby as he's like zooming around and still taking out all the stormtroopers. And then there's that moment where they realize that there's a break in the assault and they make the move out. Like, that's some badass shit. Mm.
I can't even think about October right now, so I wish I had some anesthesia and then you wake up and you're like, oh, it's October already. That would be great.
Yeah, I mean, crazy it is, these last 2 months seem like 30 years, but
yes,
October
it's only
been
2 months.
Yeah, October will be here before we know it, though.
Yeah, I feel like it's gonna get worse for us. Like this feeling of I don't even know how to describe it, but I think it's gonna get worse because Chris, you said it in the beginning of the episode. It's like the weather's been really shitty, and so it doesn't really feel like you're missing out on anything,
right?
But as it gets warmer, and the reality of not being able to go to the beach. Or you know, not being able to do certain things that you would normally do during the summer, as that becomes more real, like going to baseball games or whatever it is, it's gonna suck.
All I know is I'm, you know, I've been thinking a lot about the content I consume.
Yeah.
And I think these last 2 months, I'm sure everyone has been kind of faced with their own challenges, you know, like whatever comes up to the surface now, especially the last 2 months at home. I've been quarantined myself, so I feel like some stuff just comes up a little more. Maybe if you have a family or you're busier, maybe you're not thinking about these things because you just don't have time. You're so busy taking care of other people. But I've been really thinking about the content that I consume, and I feel like my taste has changed. And I don't know if you guys feel the same. There's certain content that I'm craving for and that I would jump on right away. And then there's other content or other celebrities, maybe some Instagram accounts that I've unfollowed because they're not important to me anymore right now. Mm.
Well, that's going to happen.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. And that's, I think, is going to be happening with a lot of people. I think people are going to be reprioritizing. And I think that you learn a lot about yourself when you're alone in some cases, like some of us are, or when you don't have access to things. So we had access to so much. And we had so many options, and to have those options reduced, whether you're happy about it or not, it's a thing. And I think that that does cause you to reevaluate and like reassess things. And maybe your financial situation also factors into that, or maybe time factors into that. And like, I find for me, the things that I miss and don't miss are a little surprising to me. The things that I feel like now I could go without are interesting to me. And these are things that I never had to really think about, at least not in recent years, that I've now thought about. And yeah, I mean, I think there are going to be things about me that are very different coming out of this.
Yeah.
No doubt. I could already feel
it. I agree with that.
Yeah.
I mean, I think about, you know, it's not even about the content for me. It's more about where my time is spent in general. And I am faced every day with a tug of war because I'm with my kids and my wife, and I understand how much attention, specifically my daughter demands of me. And but I gotta work, you know, and I gotta do what I have to do as close to normal as possible. But I get to see and experience things that I wouldn't normally, right? So her development as a little human being, like her passion, like she loves to do art, and she does like really good artwork for a 3-year-old. Like surprising, like she blew me and my wife away with some coloring stuff that she did, and I was like, is this normal? I was like, do 3-year-olds do this shit? Do they blend colors like this and like express themselves that way? Like, and it's like, it's really cool stuff to see. And then with my son, you know, he's 6 months and he's doing crazy things as a human being. I mean, like that's the cool thing I get to see. And I'm actually, you know, I'm being very selective of the stuff I watch because you'd think, you know, you're home, you have a lot of time, but I feel like I've got less time because it's either work and family, which, you know, compete with each other. And then I have maybe an hour and a half, of time to, you know, watch things on TV and or not. So, but I'm okay with it. I'm cool with it. You know, this is the routine, and again, I wouldn't trade that for anything because I get literally I'm watching my kids grow up, and that's cool as hell.
Aw, I love that. I love that. Yeah, we're all kind of reshifting. It's a very weird place to be.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyways, so this show's gone on for quite some time.
Which this is definitely great, not Quibi length, yeah. That's for sure.
For sure. Definitely not. Yeah. Chris, let's do some plugs, but we'll turn it over to Vanessa first.
All right, guys. Find me on Instagram at Vanessa_Bontea, Bonta. You can tweet me, but I just haven't been a Twitter person yet, so maybe you'll drag me into it, but on Instagram, that's kind of where you'll find me. That's my platform.
Cool.
All right. And you can find us, of course, at thefanboygarage.com. All of our episodes and the merch store and all that stuff is there. And you can join the conversation with us on the Twitter, the Instagram, the Facebooks, all that stuff, at thefanboygarage. You can maybe find me on Twitter at RealCLMighty.
And you can find me on Twitter at AARonSpeaks. That is A_A_RonSpeaks. Thank you so much for listening to episode 95 of the Fanboy Garage. It is always a pleasure to have you guys with us every week. And we hope you guys stay healthy and we catch you guys next one.
Bye.